Hello and welcome. It's Tuesday and you're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. Welcome to the show. Today's show is brought to you by BarkBox. Are you familiar with BarkBox?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, it's cool. If it's for humans, BarkBox is a delivery of 4 to 6 natural treats and super fun toys curated around a surprise theme each month. For dogs, BarkBox is like the joy, Tim, of a million belly scratches.
Aww.
And I know you personally, you like belly scratches.
I love them.
Yeah, you can attest to that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today's show is brought to you by BarkBox.com. Get one free extra month of BarkBox at getbarkbox.com/darkness. Again, that's getbarkbox.com/darkness. And today's show is also brought to you by the good folks at Amazon.com. If you're going to purchase anything through Amazon.com, make sure you visit darknessradio.com and click on that killer deals link. Use the links there, whether you're in the UK, Canada, or the United States, to make all your purchases. And a small portion of each sale will go a long way to help our administrative costs on the show. Got a great week lined up for you as we head into the Easter weekend, Tim. Tomorrow, we'll talk about how to talk to angels, a practical guide to asking for guidance, comfort, and strength. Then on Thursday, we're going to take a look at the Shroud of Turin, which is a fascinating mystery to me.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to discuss that with a former Benedictine monk, Joseph Marino. And then on Friday, Dr. Lauren Belge will join us. And we're going to talk with her book, Near Death in the ICU, Stories from Patients Near Death and Why We Should Listen to Them. Here's somebody in the medical community, a very prominent doctor, Tim, that looks at these experiences, believes them, and thinks that the medical community on the whole should definitely take more witness and notice.
I think so, too. Yeah.
Of this. Yeah. So pretty cool stuff. All right. Let's get started with tonight's show, though. Tonight's show, Chasing the Haunt. Christopher Maggard is joining us. We get the chance to hear his historical journey into the unknown from his early years to today. What has fueled his fire to examine and explore the paranormal? Welcome to the show, Christopher Maggard. Thank you for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. You know, we've known each other for a long time. We've never had a chance to really kind of sit down and talk, so this will be intriguing. What got you into the field of paranormal investigating? What was your first experience with something supernatural?
Well, when I was a little kid, a bunch of us were hanging out in the woods, building a tree fort. You could say that was our first experience, or mine, where we saw this man standing in the woods just watching us, kind of creepy. And so we just kind of like, hey, dude, kind of like started taunting him. And we got brave for a bunch of 5, 6, and 7-year-olds, started walking towards him saying, what's your problem? Blah, blah, blah. And the man started to walk away from us, going behind a tree. And then there was nothing. Just no one, nowhere. We walked around the tree. He was gone. We had no clue what was going on. That was the most bizarre thing. But I think the more intense thing happened was with my family that overshadowed anything prior to that as a little kid.
All right. Your family had a horrific experience. Okay, where did this take place, and can you give us a starting date, like what year?
This was in the early 80s, like around 1980, 81, in Southern California, in Fountain Valley, California, which is not too far from Huntington Beach. My parents bought a really nice middle-class home. Something similar like you would see in a Steven Spielberg movie. Really, just every house looked the same.
Right.
So things were normal for the first year living there. Until one night, my sister woke up around 2 a.m. in the morning, screaming at the top of her lungs. Now, of course, mom and dad are coming from downstairs from their room. I'm coming from my bedroom, falling right behind my brother and my other sister. And there's my sister Kim, the youngest one, sitting on the floor holding her leg, saying that someone grabbed her leg. And the weird thing about my sister, she had one of those old water beds that sat on a 2-drawer pedestal, if you ever seen those.
Right.
And she would hang her left leg over the side of the bed to get her to go to sleep. That's how she could go to sleep. She was weird. So, but that's when she said someone grabbed her leg. My dad, my brother, they looked through the house. No one broke in, no signs of a break in, nothing. And that was the most horrific night to start the most horrific experience for myself, my sister, and the entire family.
What brought this on? Do we have any clue what the trigger was?
Well, here's the thing, Dave. Years after dealing with that place, that house for so many years, finally moving out, my mom and dad decided to do a little bit of research back onto why something like that happened. And the only thing we could find out, or my mom and dad could find out at the time, was that the man that owned the house prior to my parents buying it, he was a very chauvinistic womanizer. He believed a woman should only speak when spoken to, barefoot and pregnant. He was an abuser. And he died of a cardiac arrest in the house, remodeling it when he owned it. And the only thing we could tie in with my sister is my sister was a rebellion. She was that teenage, heavy metal, Motley Crue rebellion teenager. And so that's the only thing we could think that would tie that in to why these attacks started on her.
So just because this guy that haunted it, you think was kind of a jerk and abusive towards women, that's why she was the main focal point? You would think it would be after your mother specifically, or was your sister kind of a rabble-rouser?
Oh, she was a rabble-rouser big time.
Okay, so this was kind of his way of keeping her in line.
Yeah, his attempts, correct. Yeah, and it caused a lot of problems with the family, I'm not going to lie. There was so many countless experiences happening in that house, and it started to affect everybody towards each other in the house because our parents didn't believe us kids. They thought we were crazy until they experienced it themselves. And then until the most horrific day in the summer, I can remember it was summertime. We just had brunch. Everybody was in the kitchen. We was talking about what we was going to do. I was going to go down the street, hang out with my buddy Raymond.
And how long after that initial attack on your sister did this take place?
About 3 years, man.
Really? Okay.
We dealt with this for 3 years. And so when we're sitting in the kitchen, Kim was by the kitchen window that sat above the sink. And literally, it looked like someone, Dave, if someone grabbed you by the shoulders and forced you through a window. And so the first thing my sister did was put her hand out to stop the impact, cut her whole arm up. And mom and dad were just freaked. Mom and dad ran Kim to the hospital. We're all scared. We didn't know what the heck's going on. On top of everything that's already been happening. But that was the line that was drawn for my parents to move out of that house. Thank God my sister's, she survived from that, but it was a pretty, pretty horrible mess.
Wow. It sounds traumatic. What kind of things were going on in between that first initial grab and then the shove out the window? What all did you guys endure?
Well, there was, like, my parents' bedroom, imagine a two-story house, and the upstairs is just one bedroom and one bath. Massive. And that was my parents' room. When they weren't home on the weekends, like, they went to Vegas one time to get married. And my stepmom, let me clarify that, my stepmom and my dad, they went to go get married. And it sounded like someone was jumping off the bed, like a grown adult, like you and I, or somebody who just jumping off the bed and jumping on the floor and running across the floor back and forth. It was causing a bunch of noise and mischief. We was dealing with those experiences quite often. Mom and dad never experienced it, but we kids did. Then there would be things coming up missing, the typical, where's the keys? All the keys are ended up over there, or the toothbrush is over here, or just stuff like that. Kim's boyfriend had a motorcycle that he would park in our garage. And we had the automatic garage door opener and the door locked, side door for the garage locked from the inside. Every time he was over at 9 p.m. at night, his Mercury alarm he had on his bike would go off every friggin' time at 9 o'clock. Not to mention one night I came out of my bedroom to go to the bathroom down the hallway that would go out towards the garage. There was this man standing there, and you could see him silhouetted, kind of almost like that Predator effect, but you can still see him silhouetted from the bathroom light. I forgot about going to the bathroom at that point in time.
Right.
So, I mean, these are just the things that happened. My other sister, Rose, her bedroom was next to the back patio. She saw a man just peering through her window. Everybody ran out there. There was no one outside. We constantly had these things going on. Another time, it seemed like Kim was getting punched in the gut. She said her stomach just kept getting sharp pains to her gut. Kim just had to sit down, and Mom would look at her and go, "Are you pregnant?" That's the first thing my mom would say. Pissed Kim off. But it wasn't. She wasn't pregnant, and there was nothing wrong with her. But these things kept happening. Another time, Kim was in the bedroom or in her bathroom doing her hair. Someone pulled her hair. There was no one else in there with her. Hmm. These are things that kept going on nonstop.
Did anyone else in the family ever end up feeling like they were starting to become the target as well, or was this always just centrally located around the sister?
Mainly, for the longest time, it was centralized around Kim. Then it started going towards my other sister, Rose. Not so much my brother, Jim, and myself. And then, lastly, my parents. I don't know why it went in that order or why it didn't really affect my parents or made itself known to my parents. But it seemed like us kids, and now I'm being the youngest, Kim about 14, he's the oldest, or next to the oldest, he was 18, and Rose was in her 20s. So it didn't really target anybody at first except Kim. And then it started kind of sprawling out towards each and one of us, like then me, then Rose, and a little bit of Jim, and then Mom and Dad finally.
Were you guys hitting certain ages that you were all kind of coming into alignment at the age your sister was when she first started being attacked?
No, I mean, like I said, Kim and Jim, they're the oldest. So they already had jobs and stuff like that. So, excuse me, I was starting to come of age. I mean, I was getting around 10, 11 years old. But I think the main thing we all could agree on, it was that because of the way Kim was more rebellious, it focused on her. And then I thought I'd be the tough little brother and say, leave my sister alone. And so then it started coming towards me, making itself known. And then Rose started getting pissed off about it. And then everybody started arguing over this thing. And it made the whole household uneasy.
Well, yeah, I would guess so with all that's happening. When your parents finally started to have some experiences, What kind of things were happening to them that led them to believe this wasn't just the kid's imagination anymore?
Well, they started to realize with the noises happening upstairs, they finally heard it. Thank God they finally heard it instead of thinking we're just out of our minds. We was downstairs in the living room watching a movie, and then they heard all the noise upstairs. And Mom and Dad just looked at each other, and they looked at us, and all we said, see? Told you. And that was where they started believing us more, and the final straw was when Kim got pushed through the window. And they said, that's enough.
All right. Once you've decided it's enough, what's the next move? I mean, just we're going to get out, we're going to leave, or are you going to stay and fight?
Mom and Dad, what we did, they started to get really religious and started reading the Bible more. And so we started doing prayers before dinners, and when we felt unsafe or insecure of what might going to happen, we would pray. And it didn't seem to be enough. So they decided, my dad started to look for a new job, look for a new house, and we just moved. They moved us out of that house. And the odd thing about that, after we moved out, that house caught on fire right after.
Oh, really? Like within a week or two or within a few months?
A few months.
All right. And what was the cause? Did they ever find out what sparked the blaze?
No, my mom never told me. My mom and dad never told me. They didn't say what caused the fire. But the next house we did live in, the next two houses, it seemed like the activity started again. Second house, after we moved out of that one in Fountain Valley, that's where I was in my gym, getting close to being ready to graduate from high school. And mm-hmm. I would challenge this thing to stop bugging us because it started up again. And Kim already moved out. Rose moved out. Jim moved out. They had their own places. And I was getting ready to graduate high school.
Well, this is a new place. Obviously, you're not thinking it's the same being or creature that's coming after you, or did you believe that you were being followed by something?
I believe we was being followed by something, possibly the same friggin' idiot that caused the problems in the house in Fountain Valley. So with that being said, moving out of that house, and my parents finally moved out of that house burned down too. So it's just like, Jesus, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, boy, this is like a horror movie thing, right? Sinister. You got to get rid of the house as soon as the people leave it before somebody else moves in and carries on the tradition and the evil that's in there.
I mean, it does sound like it's straight out of a friggin' horror movie, but this is a real life story, and it's something that I don't wish on anybody ever.
Right.
I don't. And the whole paranormal aspect, I think, is... it can be very scary and it can be very harmful. And I try to warn people, you know, be careful what you wish for, because you might get a little bit more than what you wanted.
Right. Understandable. That's you've got all this activity going on. Obviously you've become believers. As you're getting stronger and older, are you, you know, is your faith in religion starting to back you up in this? I mean, it seems that you're still vulnerable to whatever this being or creature is. And that it's coming after you.
As I got older, believe me, I reached out for churches. I reached out for so much help. From the first time of that horrific attack with my family in Fountain Valley to the time right before I graduated, I began to do my own little explorations and urban exes and try to understand the unknown and picking up any book that could explain why something like this that you can't see can hurt something physically. And it became an ongoing obsession. It turned into an obsession, I'm not going to lie. And it still is an obsession, but it's to this day, I think I've reached to the point where I can get only so much information to where I'm almost just banging my head against the wall to trying to figure out, okay, I know it's something out there. I know it's there. I don't think I'm going to have the tools yet, or the technology is not available for any of us yet to actually get to where we need to know what's really on the other side.
Where do you go from here when your family has this kind of experience and it continues to track you and follow you? After your brothers and sisters moved out of the house, would they have any residual effects from these hauntings, or was it like once you were all separated, it would stop?
Dave, let me tell you something. My sister Kim will never talk about it ever again. She doesn't to this day. It affected her badly. It affected her so bad that she had a rough time after living on her own, not from being attached or something attached to her, but dealing with life as much as she could because of those attacks. Rose, she had a few experiences, but nothing major, but she's more open to it to this day as we're older and adults and got our own family. She's more open to it than my brother or anybody else would be. Jim, nothing with him. He just, once he was gone, that was it. You know, so it didn't really affect him as much. I think the only thing that really affected him was watching his own sister getting attacked and seeing the things happen to everybody else in the family. That affected him more than anything else.
When you have this chance to reflect back as adults and you're talking to your brothers and sisters about this, were more memories opened up from them? Did they suddenly recall other bits that maybe they'd kept quiet for all this time?
You know, we just reflected back on that one time in that one house in Fountain Valley. That's the only thing we really reflected on. Granted, we reflected on the other house, but not as much as the house in Fountain Valley. Nothing else opened up. Kim, like I said, she won't talk about it. She's too scared to even talk about it. She's afraid something else will happen again if she starts talking about it. So she just has totally blocked it all off once she has gotten her own life. She's a grown woman now, got a great family, got great kids. So she just feels better that it's better just left unsaid, forgotten about, and not worry about it, because she's got her family to worry about.
Were you disillusioned with the fact that churches and other people really had no way to help you?
I wouldn't say that, man. I would say that I was more disappointed, because that's who you reach out to. I would, you know, you look to the man of cloth in hopes of God or a servant of God to be there to help you and guide you through it. But they just looked They said my sister was crazy. She needs mental help. No, she didn't need mental help. I did get help when I had my own condo from a non-denominational church, and I was still experiencing attacks. They helped me out with a blessing and was told to take, if I had any artifacts left from my childhood when I lived with my parents, to get rid of it. And I had a few items, and I did.
What was their theory? Why did they believe this was happening to you and your family?
I think at the time they were just trying to comfort. But the only thing they could say, one man said that when you sit there and acknowledge the unknown, they will attack more. Another man just said, you guys are just out of your minds. And the final man that I've dealt with from the non-denominational church, he believed that if you dealt with it, you faced it, you fought it, and you didn't do away with it, it will stay with you. And you eventually need to get rid of it or it will break you down. It will tear you down physically, mentally, and you'll start losing things. You'll lose jobs. You won't care about life. And so I guess pretty much, you know, when I had that final blessing from that one man from the non-denominational church and got rid of a few items I kept on from my childhood, things seemed to mellow out, seemed to calm down. No more personal attacks in my home.
It's just as simple as that. I mean, doesn't that seem strange to you that even though you've evoked religious help and clearing, nothing got rid of it until you just got rid of personal possessions?
It did seem weird. It seemed really weird to me. I'm not going to lie about that. It just seemed like, okay, how can something so aggressive over the years just stop? It just quit. Was it that gentleman from the non-denominational church empowered me with strength within myself to know how to deal with it? Or was it something that's just a comfort he would say, and I believed it so much that I blocked everything out? Who knows? But the one thing it did do for me is that it fueled my fire to even learn more how a man of God will come in and just say, that's it, game over, and nothing happens. But it also fueled my fire to learn more of the unknown. Listen to these stories other people talk about. Listen to these urban legends that are all around us every day. So it's bizarre how things went and how they kind of went from so aggressive to, okay, we're going to stop. That's it. I was personally, Dave, I was tired at that point. I was so tired of it all being these attacks. And I took my own fault for taking on the responsibility, saying, you leave my sister alone. Don't you dare touch her again. You take on me if that's what you want to do, being the brave little teenager, younger brother. So, you know, did I ask for it? I did. Did I get it? I sure did.
Well, that pushed you into more exploration of the paranormal and seeking answers to why this happens. Do you believe that this being was demonic in nature, or was it just a cantankerous, crabby old ghost?
I don't believe it was demonic at all. I just think it was an old bastard who had a really bad attitude. And I think that energy from that person, that when he was alive, resided there in that home in Fountain Valley. And mixing with our energies, it just kind of made that connection, and it stuck. And it didn't want to go away. And so I think it was just, it wasn't demonic. I can say, am I a demonologist? No. Have I seen a demon? No. Do I know what a demon is for exact? No. But I can say 80%, I don't believe it was a demon.
But yet it was kind of following those same protocols, right? Where it ended up wearing you guys down and oppressing you and pressing down and causing dismay and fighting and just so much negative anxiety in your household.
Yeah. I kind of look at it like this. Imagine, if you will, you got a family over here and they got one child in that family who has a very bad, let's say, drug habit. And he's doing everything to cause problems in that family. He's like stealing items, taking things, causing arguments, and it causes dismay in that family. So how do you deal with that? Either you fight it and you try to keep fighting it and you keep pushing at it to get it better, or you just cut it off. And that might sound cruel, but I think it's kind of the same thing along the premises of the unknown. It's We're dealing with it. We're fighting with it. Eventually, you need to cut it off and stop it. Or you deal with the final consequences. And that is tearing a family apart.
Well, knowing what it had done to your family in the past, why did you decide to keep down that path, Chris, and investigate and put yourself out there to go to some of the most notorious haunted places and continue to research?
It's my obsession. It hooked me. I could not understand. I wanted to find out why something like that could hurt something physically. I could not understand it then, and I wanted to know, and I kept going, and I kept pushing, regardless of what I had to deal with, regardless of the negativity that might come from it, regardless of the pain it might put upon myself. It's an obsession, Dave. I'm not going to lie. It turned into an obsession because I wanted to find an answer what happened to my sister and why it affected her so bad. And I still think about it to this day. And I don't know, man. I hated watching my sister go through that. I hated it. And I don't want to see anybody else ever go through that. I don't.
All right. We have to take a break. We'll come back. We'll hear more of your story, Chasing the Haunt, and some of the places you've investigated and what you find. What is the weird threads in all of these type of hauntings? Why are these places so active? And we'll hear from Christopher Maggard as we continue on with that. When we return, we'll continue Chasing the Haunt with Christopher Maggard here on Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back here on the best of Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Later on this week, we're going to be discussing how to talk to angels, a practical guide to asking for guidance, comfort, and strength. I figured as we're heading into the Easter holiday, Tim, these are some great topics to check in on.
Yeah.
You know, this is also retrograde. I guess there's like four planets in retrograde. And that's really? Not Gatorade, Tim. Gatorade's good and refreshing. Retrograde will bend you over and take horrible, horrible advantage of you.
Oh, tell me about it.
Yeah. So we want people to be able to get some help and seek the answers. So Lucinda Gabriel will be our guest tomorrow as we discuss talking to angels and how to ask for guidance, comfort, and strength and be successful with that. The Shroud of Turin will be our topic on Thursday as we talk about the burial shroud of Jesus. And what is it about this amazing historic relic that keeps people so enthralled? We'll talk to former Benedictine monk who has spent over 40 years investigating this. What are his findings? Is this nothing more than a really interesting reproduction art piece? Or is there a tie to the historical Jesus Christ? Friday, Dr. Lauren Bellage will join us, and we're going to talk about her book, Near Death in the ICU, Stories from Patients Near Death and Why We Should Listen to Them. I also want to make a quick mention. If you're interested in getting out and finding out more about the paranormal and you want to hear from some of the top experts in the field, check out darknessevents.com. And you can follow along, see where we're going to be in the United States and around the world this year, so you can join us on hands-on investigations and hear from some of the top speakers in the world. We're going to be doing an event at the Oddfellows Asylum in July. That's out in Liberty, Missouri. It's been featured on Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures. It's a creepy, cool place, and it's a safe environment to investigate. I'll be leading investigations along with Bill Chappell, Chris Fleming, Jason Offit, the author and researcher, will be on hand to talk about black-eyed kids and other strange phenomena. We've got 2 days of talks, 2 nights of ghost hunts, and a package that can be affordable for anybody that wants to attend. So go check out darknessevents.com for that. And if you're a bit more adventurous, which I'm hoping Mr. Dennis will be next year once his health is in line and his foot is working, you can come with me to England this year. We're going to be going in August. It's our British invasion first wave. The original trip we had set up for September sold out in 18 hours. We had to open up a second trip, and we're more than half sold out on that already. If you'd like to join us in England and follow the trails of Jack the Ripper, historic Dracula tales, visit Hogwarts, Stonehenge, here's some of the most amazing true life ghost stories, old cemeteries, haunted castles, and a chance to investigate Castle Rising and the Darby Jail, then this is the trip you want to sign up for. Go check it out. It's taking place in August. You are going to have the adventure of a lifetime. This, I promise, this was hand-selected, hand-picked, and Neil's story. You've heard him on our show. You've heard him on Darkness Radio and Coast to Coast AM. He's our guide for the entire trip. He'll take us to all of these places, regale us with the tales of the haunted and supernatural. Go sign up now. I promise you, you are going to have the best time of your life. We love doing these European trips and foreign trips, and every time we go, we become a bigger branded family, and we'd love for you to join us on that. Christopher Maggard is our guest this evening. His book, Chasing the Haunt, we heard about his young life and upbringing into the paranormal, and now we're going to start to hear about some of the places he's investigated that he found the most fascinating, the most haunted. First of all, Chris, what is your theory? Why do these places remain so active years and in some cases decades upon decades after life lived there?
You know, that's a good question, Dave.
I knew I'd get to one of those again.
Hands down, nailed it. You know, that's a good question I had for so many years, and I think I finally kind of came up with an idea, you know, when I worked with my buddy Patrick Shields. We kind of dived into the anatomy aspect of how that happens. And, you know, we have these molecules and atoms in our bodies, and those atoms still hang around after we die, and we kind of had this theory. You talked about this one doctor that is going to be on your show about experiences in the ER. Well, there was a doctor in the 70s, and I can't remember his name right off the top of my head at the moment, but he did a study on the atoms of a body that retain the memories of us, and he called it atomic memory. And what it is that these atoms stay behind in a place that either was very detrimental to somebody, their last moments in life, and we're actually connecting with these atoms. So I think that's what's going on. Something that just stays something so familiar to somebody at their time in their life, and their memories are just attached to that location. And I think it doesn't go away, not until months later or years later, or even maybe decades, however long it takes. So I think it's just something that means something to somebody so much, regardless good or bad. So I think that's what kind of hangs out in these amazing places that I've come across so many times.
Well, we'll work our way to the places you think are the most active. But what were some of the first places you cut your teeth on to go out and investigate and research?
Oh, man. Well, that's a good one. One of my most memorable places was back in Southern California. It's a little urban legend called Goat's Head. It was up in Yucaipa, California. And this was known as a compound for satanic worshipers. There was a large mansion there, the good old urban legend of Satanists to heaven or nightly rituals. So the church in that area in the early 1900s pretty much chased them out. So what we did as adventurers and urban legends, myself and a couple of friends, decided to go up there and see if these stories are true. We went up there. You could see some of the buildings still there. A lot of them were burnt down from the local churches. Part of the mansion was burnt down from local churches, but when you walked inside the mansion, to the right there was a room, hardwood floors, everything looked disarrayed, crumbling, old, vines coming through the walls and windows, but on that floor was a perfect pentagram in the wood, not painted on the wood, but made into the wood. And to the room from that to the back, there was this man standing there, this figure, just kind of like a black figure, just kind of coming forward. And I ain't going to lie, dude, I kind of pooped myself a little bit when I saw that. I was just like, holy crap. And he was holding something in his hand. And the stories go to the urban legend, there would be men out there just holding the goat's head in their hand, either on a stake or by a chain. Okay, so did I actually see this urban legend come true in front of me? It was enough to freak me out, and I could hear my friends outside in the yard in front of the old mansion screaming they're seeing somebody out there. So I run out there to them because definitely I want to get out of that house because I just got scared. And they said they just saw another man out there holding something with a stick and something on top of the stick. And we're just like, okay. All right, so these urban legends seem to be true at the time.
At the time, okay. What did you uncover to prove that maybe there was more falsity than there was fact to these stories?
You know, I wouldn't say it was falsity. I would say more rationalizing, because I like to rationalize everything now. And I started learning how to rationalize everything after the creep factor or the fear that overwhelmed you. That you hear the stories, so you go to the place. Has your mind already preset and got these preconceived notions that it's going to be there? So did I actually see something that my mind just developed because I heard other stories about this place? So I just kind of rationalized it out to, okay, it was just my own mind freaking me out. So that's where I thought, okay, that was it. You know, there was nothing really to it, but it still goes back in my mind when I walked into that room where that pentagram is, and I looked to the room in the back, and there's this dude standing there. You know, you can't see him perfectly, like looking at you or me or whatever, but he just stand there holding something in the hand, and you have that, holy crap, I've just seen something, and I'm about to pee myself.
Yeah, I've had a few of those myself throughout life. And when you have it, I mean, there's something that just reignites that fire, right? And we start to get, as investigators, we start to get jaded, right? I mean, you start taking for granted paranormal encounters. And, you know, Tim and I have laughed when we started this, man, the littlest things we'd be like, wow, that was really cool. And now it's, you know, people bring me their EVP and they're like, listen to this. What do you hear? And you'll hear, is there anyone here that would like to communicate? Yes, you're in my home. You should die. And then we're like, oh, yeah, that's OK. And they're like, are you kidding me? This is amazing. We're like, yeah, well, it's kind of staticky and crackly. I don't know. Tim, what do you think? He's like, it's all right. It's funny how jaded we get to it. But then you have these kind of moments, these aha, poop yourself moments, where you kind of reinvigorate and realize, oh, yeah, this is why I do this. And that is what is so exciting about this field, right? Because even as you start getting used to it and jaded, there are still things that are really magical about the field and exploration.
God, yeah, man. Oh, that you nailed it right there. If you don't mind, I'll share this one experience.
Oh, no, we don't want you to do that. This is a radio show. We're not here to talk about experiences, Maggard.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Share this experience when I was in the bathroom. Oh, I'm just kidding. No, anyway, but seriously, this family needed some help. The story was that their kids would not sleep in their own rooms. They always slept in the bed with mom and dad, and we're talking about 12, 11-year-olds, and it was getting old. So we went in there, and the normal protocol was when we went into a private investigation, I would always say, you know, have a voice recorder on. Even when as soon as we walk through the front door, have a camera rolling so we can document everything, even interaction with the homeowners, so nothing could be said bad, just covering our own ass. So we set down our voice recorder, talk with the homeowners, make sure their kids weren't there that night because we didn't want them to be there. Did our typical investigation. Went home, reviewed the footage. And the most craziest, and like you said, when you hear something, you're like, oh, my God, it keeps you going. We heard this little girl kept saying, Mommy, come here. Look, Mommy, look what they're doing, Mommy. Come here, Mommy. And dude, even when I say that now, it makes my hair stand on end. There was no freaking kid there when we was doing this. So they, whatever was there, could see us and see what we was doing. And that was the most fascinating and intriguing moment to say, I cannot stop this.
That's awesome to have these kind of experiences like that. What do you tell people, though, Chris, when you've led ghost hunts and investigations and you're collecting EVP like that and the guy next to you is running a recorder and gets nothing?
You know, that's bizarre, because first thing I'm going to do, I tell people, like, okay, look, let's be rational about this. I captured this, but you didn't. So let's kind of see what's going on around us. Let's talk about maybe there's things that are coming in that we don't realize, radio waves, signals, anything. We need to be rational about it. It's a hit and miss type of thing. Or is there something that I was close to that the energy, the vibration frequency was right there in front of my voice recorder, but not yours? It's very possible. I tell people, don't get discouraged. If you're truly passionate about it, don't get discouraged, because sooner or later, you're going to come across that one piece that's just going to give you that whole wow factor, and it's going to keep going. And maybe you will be the guy that will make that groundbreaking moment in life to say, we have found the connection to the unknown. So I tell people, don't be discouraged if you're really passionate about it.
All right, let's hear about some of the other amazing locations you've had a chance to investigate and some of the holy poop moments that you've done. Well, we kind of talked about some of the ones you cut your teeth on. Now, I know I met you a few times at one prominent location. Let's start to walk through that. How did you get involved with these different locations and get in there investigating?
Well, like the one that we hung out, let's talk about Ohio State Reformatory.
Right.
Man. Just going up upon driving up on that long driveway in front of that building, it's majestic, and it's got that creep factor. And I think what's got me more involved about these most historical locations is just the history, and that's what's fascinating about it, man. And going into them and experiencing what we experienced at Ohio State Reformatory, and knowing the things that happened there, and then you're getting a reaction from it. Is bizarre, and it's so I can't stop, and I love going back to that place, like that Ohio State Reformatory. I've been there several times and cannot tell you how many times I've captured the most amazing EVPs and some amazing photography there of the unknown, and it's just a bed of activity in one of the most active places in Ohio.
Yeah, Mansfield Reformatory, we were introduced to that place. We held, I think, 4, maybe 5 events there. And, you know, Chris, I'm skeptical when it comes to locations where they're making all these grand claims. And yep. I've had some of the most profound experiences there from I'd walked with this one girl. She was kind of off on her own investigating. And she's like, Dave, I'm just getting a really weird feeling. Will you come into the cell with me? I want to do an EVP session. And I'm like, well, all right, a beautiful young lady wants me to step into a darkened cell with her. Who am I to deny her my presence? So we step into the cell, and we're kind of huddled up as we're over her equipment, and she's doing this EVP session. And very loudly on the bars behind us, you start hearing clink, 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 clink. And the two of us just did this slow burn turn to look at the thing, half expecting it's one of the guys from Ghost Adventures messing with us, you know, rattling it. There's nobody there, but you could clearly hear at the gates of this cell, something is dragging across the bars. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. It's got to be somebody up above or below us rattling other bars. And it's just echoing this way. And at that exact moment in time, you hear this exasperated, the clinking stops, and then you hear this, like, it was like, what do I have to do to get you idiots to believe that we're here? And that was unbelievable. We also saw people that were going into a cell on the lower level, and people were coming out. One walked out and began vomiting profusely because something in the cell was agitating them so much. And person after person that night, and I think you were there that night, remember? Violently affected by that. We had ghosts that were activating phones, and it was so bizarre. Mark and Debbie Constantino were down in solitary confinement with Aaron Goodwin, and we've talked about this on the show before, and Aaron's phone kept going off, and he's like, why does it keep ringing? I turned it off, and he powered on his phone, and a few minutes later, his phone would light up and start vibrating again, and it was Mark Constantino. And after the investigation, he's like, dude, turn off your phone. You keep butt dialing me. And Mark goes, what are you talking about, man? I don't even have my phone. It wasn't working right. I left it back at the hotel. And we got this really weird moment where they looked at the timestamps from these calls that were coming from Mark Constantino's phone in a hotel room 10 miles down the road. And it was at that same time I was getting reports from the hotel that the lights in the entire hotel kept going on and off, and the fire alarms were firing off. You remember that?
Yeah.
Very strange experiences. But I mean, here he's got the phone. He's like, Mark, you've called me 3 or 4 times. Look at this in my call log. And Mark is like, dude, it is not me. My phone's not even here. So that place is absolutely unbelievably bizarre. Every aspect of that location is haunted and just has this weird vibe to it. But I don't know. Is it the expectations of 200 people marching around looking for something that's causing all of this chaotic energy? Or are the ghosts of these former inmates just having a hell of a time freaking people out and hanging around?
There was a point up in the Jesus room. I went with Mark and Debbie Constantino and Aaron. They were doing an audio session. And Mark and Debbie captured this audio from something in that room saying, look at all you MFers.
Right.
It was like, so, yeah, is it these past inmates sitting there messing with us? Like, oh, yeah, fresh meat. Look at all this fresh meat.
Right. Yeah, and you know what's funny? It sounds like, you know, we're pontificating and guessing on this. But what's interesting is many former inmates have come by to visit. And what I found intriguing is that they've talked about when they were there doing time, how they would hear things at night. They would hear what sounds like a cacophony of voices coming up and down the rows, talking and chattering amongst themselves. They would hear things moving about in their cells. And then you sit there thinking, are they haunted by the ghosts of us going into these cells in the future? You know, is this place kind of a vortex in time where the inmates were hearing all of these weird noises and that was just us 10 years later moving about in their cells trying to communicate with them?
God, that's a wild theory, man. That could drive you absolutely nuts thinking about it, but it's a good theory. I mean, it's a good theory. I like that idea. You know, it's just, what is it there that that place is so ominous of just extreme activity? I mean,
I loved being there, too. We brought Robert Murch, the Ouija board historian.
Yeah,
and
good dude.
Bob is such a sweetheart of a guy. And although he loves the Ouija board, he believes it has nothing to do with ghosts. You know, he's like, I think this is just something we do. And it's, you know, but he's fascinated by the history. And he's never had an experience at this point. And at one point, the two of us, you know, we're big dopes, big kids. And we know Jeff is leading a group up into that area. So we're hiding behind this post. We're going to jump out and give him and his little group a scare, you know, which we don't do often. But sometimes the internal 8-year-old boy in us comes out and we're hiding there and we're kind of huddling and oh, this is going to be hilarious. We're going to freak Jeff out. He's going to lose his cool. And we're standing there. And all of a sudden behind us, you start hearing shh, 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 shh. Oh, something yeah. starts walking in the concrete. And Bob Murch turns around and he figures maybe Jeff got the drop on us. And we turn around. There's nothing there, but you could hear something walking from one side into one of the cells. He turns to me and he goes, what the hell was that, Dave? And I go, I don't know. We go in and we start looking around. Can't find any explanation. But there were footsteps moving around us as we're hiding up on the one level in the main part of the building, not out in the prison cell area. And he goes, Dave, this is awesome. I've been into the paranormal for so long. I love this stuff. I've never had an experience. And we had it right there at Mansfield. And it had nothing to do with the Ouija board. There wasn't even a Ouija board out at that time. But here he was. And it really kind of that place, if you want an experience, that is a life affirming or afterlife affirming location.
Oh, absolutely, man. And people can't forget the history and the architecture either. That's just phenomenal. It's downright amazing. Even up in the quarters where the people used to live there, the warden and his family, I had the same experience what you're just talking about up there by their bedrooms. You hear somebody just shuffling their feet, walking out from a room, and you're just like going, hello. Really? This is happening right now. And it's such an amazing, it happens during the daytime too, just not at night.
What is the scariest experiences you've ever had investigating the paranormal?
When I got bitch slapped. I'm gonna have to say that.
Did you just refer to yourself as a bitch?
No, I'm not saying I'm a bitch.
Then it wasn't I got guy slapped. You said you were bitch slapped, so I'm gonna put you in that category, Chris.
Okay, all right. Well, okay, sucker punch. Let's go with that.
Yeah, okay. All right, sucker. Let's hear what happened to you.
One of the most active places to this day, dude, I ain't going to lie, is OSPH, Old South Pittsburgh Hospital in Tennessee. Hands down, right? I mean, there's nothing I can explain about that place. There's that one and another one. There's two other places that just hands down. But OSPH, going down the main hallway in the top floor, just kind of getting a feel for the place, me and the crew, just kind of seeing what's going on there, scoping it out, and smack right in the face in the middle of the hallway. And I'm just like, are you serious? It just happened. How can this just happen? And that fuels my fire again. How can something of the unknown affect us physically? And Patrick's looking at me. Jake's looking at me. Jake's right next to me, and he sees my face got distorted when he heard the slap. And he's just like, wow, this just happened. It's that place right there is just phenomenal. And if anybody ever gets – I think you was there, Dave. You was there for Paranormal Challenge, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, we had some weird stuff happen during the filming of that show as well, from unruly contestants to strange things happening behind the scenes as we were moving around setting up different sites. Time is slipping away from us here, Chris. Let's hear about a couple more of the places you cover in your book and some of the other experiences you've had.
Well, a couple other places. One is a place called Post Town Elementary in Middletown, Ohio. The greatest mystery to this day to me, why that place is so active when there is not a confirmed death there. But it sits on a land where it was used as a triage center for two train wrecks in the early 1900s. So, and it also had a baby farm there in the early 1900s. So it was, it's a very intriguing place, and it's constantly something's going on there. And one other place that's just heartfelt and also very bizarre is the old site for the Beverly Hills Supper Club in Northern Kentucky, where 169 people lost their lives to a fire, were trapped inside.
Oh.
And to this day, it's still being investigated, and they do believe it's mob related. And the funny thing is, Dave, that the Beverly Hills Supper Club is tied into the old Latin Quarters, a.k.a. Bobby Mackey's, and also the Lookout House and another place called the Shillings Drive-Through Restaurant. So there was a big connection to that whole area. It's one big circle. So those are the Beverly Hills Supper Club site. There is remnants of it there, even from the old mob, the Cleveland Four, that ran this area in the early 1900s. One of their safes is still sitting there. It's been busted open. There's dishes, remnants of dishes there. It's a very sad and eerie feeling that you get up there, knowing that these 169 people were locked inside when the fire went down. And like I said, it's still being investigated to this day. And that fire happened in 1976.
Have you collected any evidence of what happened there? I mean, do you hear the screams? Do you hear the sounds of people in panic? What all has gone on for the investigations you've done?
Well, you know, going up to that site, it's hard to really do any audio because you're sitting on top of a hill, and right below the hill is the main freeway. So you get a lot of sound from that, but you do hear once in a while, you hear like someone's just like crying out of nowhere, and you have this really oppressive feeling of sadness, and it actually just, you know, I'm not going back to the bitch part, but it does make you feel like you want to cry, dude, because you know these people piled on top of each other at a door trying to get out.
Yeah, that's horrific. I unfortunately returned to my apartment about 20 years ago, and a fire had broken out in the apartment right across the hall from me, and the father, mother, and baby succumbed to the smoke and died, burned to death right inside their front door, which was 4 feet, 5 feet away from my door. And Jeez. Yeah, that was still, I mean, I'd see and hear weird things moving around in that apartment after they had passed. But yeah, which, just a tragic experience, and what a horrific moment. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's horrible.
God, that's horrible, man.
Yeah.
It's just, whew.
Well, what are you, now the book is available, and it's out and available through all major booksellers, Amazon, and so on?
Yeah, Amazon.com, createspace.com, and I'm working on getting a Kindle deals where people can actually just bring up their little Kindle and read it on their tablets, stuff like that. So, and also, I'll have copies available at some upcoming events I'm going to be with this year. But it was hard to write a book, dude. I never thought it would be that hard, and it's my first time, and it was a challenge. I ain't going to lie.
Well, I'm glad you were able to get it down on paper and share some of your stories for people that are going through experiences of their own. It's always nice to get some confirmation that you're not alone in the world and that there are other people that have made it through this darkness and have seen these things and have had these things happen. So thank you for sharing your story with us, Chris.
No, thank you, man. Thank you very much for having me and letting me share this story.
We've got a link up for the book, Chasing the Haunt, Christopher Maggard, our guest this evening. And again, we want to thank our sponsors, Amazon.com. Remember, if you're going to make any purchases through Amazon.com, visit darknessradio.com and click on our killer links deal. Use the links there for Amazon.com. And every purchase you make, a small portion of it goes to help keep our show on the air. And that is important. We also want to thank our new sponsor, BarkBox, where you can get all of the perfect treats and toys for your special friend, your furry baby, and make sure that they're always engaged and having fun. You get to try new things for your pets. And if you want a free month, a free extra month of BarkBox, visit getbarkbox.com/darkness when you subscribe, and you will get an extra free month from your old pals here at Beyond the Darkness. We will be back tomorrow when we talk with Lucinda Gabriel, How to Talk to Angels, A Practical Guide to Asking for Guidance, Comfort, and Strength. We'll do that tomorrow. And remember to check out, if you love what you hear on our show, George Norrie and Coast to Coast AM have been around forever, and they are the premier overnight talk show. They've got great topics, lots of fun things to tune in to. And tonight, they've got Messianic Prophecy and Reptilian Abductions with Mark Biltz and Betsy Lewis. George Norrie, the host of that show. You can check it out. I'm one of the fill-in guest hosts, usually twice a month. So you can find out all the information about upcoming shows, how you can listen to them in your area by visiting coasttocoastam.com. Special thank you to our guest, Christopher Maggard, for joining us this evening. And that's it for tonight. We'll be back with more of the best in paranormal talk radio tomorrow, right here on Beyond the Darkness.